Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Passengers awaiting flight 00H159. That's flight 00H159. Please approach the gate. Your flight is now ready for boarding.
You're listening to the Out of Home Podcast.
You're listening to the Out of Home Podcast. Are you locked into the Out of Home Podcast?
You're listening to the Out of Home Podcast. Featuring Kieran, Kwame, Yas, and Stephen.
You London boys are crazy.
What's happening, people? It's your boy Key, one quarter of the Out of Home Podcast. Welcome to the second installment of our Golden Generation Conversations. This series of talks were recorded before we started making our film, which you can check out now online. And this show in particular is with the lovely Cuba, an original Out of Homie who's lived in Amsterdam for many years, having been born in the UK. She talks to us about her cultural heritage, her experiences being a black woman in the creative scene, and her thoughts on her own legacy. Please sit back, enjoy, relax, and remember, keep it out of home. Cute.
So basically, you told us a bunch of stuff. You're from Manchester, you are Jamaican, you're Nigerian, you're Ghanaian, you're also English, and also live in Amsterdam, which means that you have a very varied upbringing, a very unique perspective on the world as well. Mm-hmm. But it'd be interesting to understand what it was like growing up with those types of influences in your life. And let's start there. Like, what was it like having all of those influences from different parts of the world in your life at such an early age?
All right, I think we then have to go back to where I was brought up. Mm-hmm. I was brought up in Manchester.
Yeah.
Which part of Manchester?
Moss Hyde.
Jeez.
Yeah, I mean,
shouts out.
That's what it is.
I used to live in Stockport.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Boring.
I was not going to live in Mossad.
So my side. So your reaction, for the people listening, your reaction already colours in what Mossad used to be. Because it has changed a bit.
Imagine.
But Mossad's very rough, right? Drugs, gangs, violence, just rough. Like, the estate is just...
A mausoleum.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. So, huge family from all sorts. So the Jamaican side on my mum's side, Ghanaian side from my mum's side, and the Nigerian. My dad grew up in Lagos. Mm. Very, very strict African upbringing we had. And because he wanted the best for my sister and I, Salsa and I, he actually removed us from my side and we travelled the world.
Wow.
For years, yeah.
Really? So whereabouts did you go then?
Everywhere. Yeah. So Europe,
that explains
the whole of Europe.
A lot already.
Mm. Oh, it does?
About your character,
okay. Well, okay.
But please continue, sorry.
No problem. So we bought a caravan and we travelled Europe.
Wow.
Then
wait.
Yeah, go on.
How old were you?
This is so interesting. I never knew this.
I never knew this. Yeah.
I was about 7.
Wow.
Started from 7, yeah? 6,
wow.
7.
And then sorry.
Yeah.
How long were you on tour for? But I think you'll get to that.
I think we traveled for about 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
Jesus. And then we used to go back to England, enroll in school. Then be pulled out of school again, travel again, then go back to school and then back
and forth. Are you doing this all in half term or just random
weeks
of the...
No, we were homeschooled by my dad. Yeah.
Now it's making sense.
Because
you said strict.
Strict.
West African bringing then.
Yeah,
is uncle taking you out of school then?
No. No, cool. So we were homeschooled by my dad. Mm. Lived in Nigeria, lived in India. Lived in Canada.
Where in India did you live?
Goa and Kerala.
In Kerala, that's where Aki is from. Aki is from Kerala.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that happened. Homeschooled by my dad. Mm. And then, okay, it's a funny story. We were actually meant to move to India to live.
Yeah.
Bought a house, enrolled in school. And my dad was finalizing some business in India with his girlfriend of the time. And so he dropped us off with my big sister.
Yeah.
Okay, by the way, African dad, 14 kids.
Wow.
So my eldest sister yeah. lived in Amsterdam. He dropped us off for about 2 months.
Yeah.
By the time he came back, Salsa and I spoke Dutch.
Wow.
Because we were like mimicking
this is
everybody.
This is mad.
So, I'm so engaged.
Your BBC show. Hey, listen, hold up. Discovery Channel.
Discovery Channel.
Sorry, but go on.
No, it's fine. So then we were like, Baba, can we please stay?
Mm.
He was like, oh, but I've just bought a house. Just,
in
you know.
Big bad India, no? Like, wow. Like it's Belgium. No, like, it's far away.
It's far.
It's
far.
It's far.
It's our land, bro.
Like, it's... Like, we lived our life there. Like, we were on the beach every day. Like, you know, we were learning so many different things. Wow. But we spoke Dutch. Mm. So we were like, Baba, can we please stay? And so we ended up staying... And yeah, here we are.
That's crazy.
Really is.
That's wild.
So, can we just have a round of applause for that story?
Yeah.
Oh, thanks. My life story.
So like, obviously we want to get into like how you got into creativity, but like hearing that part of your story is actually really interesting to understand like, how did you get into like, moving into like creativity? Because homeschooling is not the same as obviously, like what's in normal schooling, what would you call it? I don't know, normal schooling.
Yeah, just normal schooling. Yeah.
Yeah, I get it,
and like, you know, you have your lessons, you have your English, maths and whatever, and art, and you probably have drama and stuff like this. So like, how did you go about having those lessons that weren't necessarily like the basics of schooling, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, so when we moved to Amsterdam, we were put in a language class.
Mm.
And so it was, we didn't fully speak the language. So we spoke Dutch, but it was just the basics. Mm. So we were actually put into a special class. Mm. And I think, I don't know, I'm just trying to think about what that process was like. But I think because life had to then all of a sudden be so visual in communicating with people, maybe that. Mm. And also, I was bullied a lot.
Mm.
So, because you have to understand, when you're moved out of school so many times and you're constantly moving, starting relationships with people becomes like a thing. Like, it's really difficult. And, you know, I've been through therapy for this because it's difficult to then, like, trust the fact that, okay, even with my boyfriend, I mean, we've been together for a long time, but at the early stages of my relationship with him, I was like, oh, my God, this guy's going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
Not because he's a bad person.
Not
because he didn't love me, but because in my mind, that's what happens. Mm. Things leave.
Hard for you to, like, settle, innit?
Settle.
Yeah.
And so I used to read a lot. Like, I devour books. I still do. Read. And so reading is actually also quite creative, because you're actually losing yourself in a different world, and you're becoming that character. You're becoming, you know, you're painting the picture of that world that you then disappear into. Mm-hmm. And so I think that maybe also influenced it, because I'm a photographer, so I try and capture a moment and show it to other people and be like, oh my God, look at this beautiful face, because it's portraits that I do.
What do you think? I'm interested to know why you wanted to stay in Amsterdam, but what do you think traveling around so much at that age did for you?
Oh, so much. Like, I saw so much of the world. You know, learned different perspectives, learned about different cultures, learned about my place as being a black woman and a woman in the world, because my dad was always like, Cuba, you have to work 10 times harder, not just because you're a woman of color, but also because you're a woman.
Mm.
I think just different perspectives and respect for the way the world moves.
That's dope, man.
I think that.
What was your favorite place from where you've traveled to, and what was the place you just couldn't vibe with at that time?
My favorite place was definitely Lagos, Nigeria.
Come on.
But that is also
organized. A minute 13.
Scripted, bro.
But that's because I went back many times afterwards. But I was just like, oh my God. I used to speak fluent Yoruba.
Wow.
So when I went, here's this Oyinbo, white girl, speaking fluent Yoruba with all these aunties and uncles at the market. So I was like, oh my God, I feel special. So that's probably why I loved it. But it's also, I think, after the times I visited afterwards, like 6 weeks, 8 weeks in the summer holidays, it just feels like home. Like there's a click. And I don't know, I mean, for a lot of people that I know now, friends that I know now, they don't really go back home. And because I've had the privilege, because I call it a privilege, but I've had the privilege of going back home, I can identify with that click of, wow, this is it. And my boyfriend went to Burkina Faso two years ago, and he finally had that click.
Yeah.
Mind you, we've been together by that time, 6-7 years, and he just never understood what I loved so much about Nigeria. Because it wasn't just the, you know, the food, but it was that click.
Did you go to school there as well?
Yeah, I went to school there as well.
Did you get licks?
Pardon? Yeah. Boy, I used to talk so much. Laugh, giggle.
And you get hit, yeah?
Hit with a ruler. Kneel down in the corner on my knees. Push my knees straight. Used to bleed.
Wow.
Seriously, I mean... It is what it is.
I asked to be taken out. Like,
I couldn't have done those type of schools, you know, but...
Because going from like a British school to there,
yeah.
It's a whole relegation system. Like you can find yourself in like set two one day, and if you're not performing, set they'll eight. put you in like, yeah. And then it's like, I was talking to one friend, but he got caught. I saw him get beat. I went back to my house. I said to my dad, I was like, nah, big man, we're not doing this. We're not doing this no more. Send me back home.
Yeah.
Take me home.
Yeah.
But like, it's really... And then the one I used to hate was like, it would be hot on the like playground and they'll make you like crawl on your knees. So that you, like...
That's
like,
what I'm saying, the knee thing.
On the concrete.
Yeah, because it would be hot and then it'd just be like melting. It was mad. Did your parents have it as well? Like the little... punishment tools they had. Like my dad's favorite one was one you raise your hands and you're just not allowed to put them.
That one.
Oh my.
No, but do you know what?
Oh my,
like, my parents used to do that to me and like leave the room.
Yeah.
Like, do you expect me to keep my hands up when you leave the room, fam?
I've had this one. I've had that one. Like,
so like, man's just chilling, yeah. And then when you hear them come back. And your throat, is it that one? These times you just threw them up, like.
This one, you're just standing.
There's also one like this.
Oh, no, not this. Like fake Superman almost.
So, for everybody listening.
That's long.
They had. They were very creative in that department.
But I must say, my privilege was because I was like, I was white. Like, I'm light skinned. So, like, they were like, oh, Cuba. And I'd just be crying. I'm like, I'm sorry, ma. I'll never do it again, ma. Nigeria is my favorite place.
So look, you traveled around and you end up in Amsterdam. And one of the things that I think that we picked up on, and I guess is maybe true to you as well, is that people that are in Amsterdam in the creative scene, they seem to work together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How have you found the creative scene here, and why do you think Amsterdam's like? Has that ability to bring people closer together and have that ability to just work together like that?
Okay, interesting one. There are two sides to this for me. A positive side and a negative side. So let's start off with the negative side and then end on a good note. So the negative side of working together is that, in my opinion, there is a culture that is very hard to penetrate. And to get into, and it's like an inside circle that if you're not raving, if you're not on the scene, you'll never be booked or you'll never be part of the cool kids crew. And that's just the way it is. I don't really like that side of the creative scene in Amsterdam, and I don't know if you guys can relate to this. Yeah, go on.
Okay.
Yeah, okay, good.
I think that's like, sorry to cut you.
No, that's fine, good.
That's like a lot of cities in general, isn't it? Like, but I think it's perpetuated a bit more in Amsterdam because it's so small and there is kind of one creative scene.
Yeah.
In London or LA or New York, there's multiple
scenes.
Well, it's a big scene, so there's enough space for everyone, but here it's like, I get you.
Yeah. And I think my not being able to, and they're after not wanting to penetrate that scene is because, call it lame, but I don't go to parties, mm-hmm. and I don't drink alcohol, and I don't go out to clubbing, and I've had the same boyfriend for years and years and years. So, like, I'm not, I don't know, it's so weird, but I just feel as though if you're not in that scene, you're not seen, if that makes sense. But to end on a good note, the scene is cool. Like, it's something else. Like, if you, like, just... like dabble in it a bit and you know people on the outskirts of it and you're invited as a plus one to a party or to Soho House or whatever the scene you want to dabble into, it's dope, like, and so rich and young.
Yeah. Why do you think that why do you think there are so many creators?
Great, such an auntie noise.
Like, I'm just shaking my head thinking, oh, because I am the creative.
Okay.
So I'm trying to think of why I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah. Also, you have a lot of peers as well, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Why are we doing what we're doing? I think it's interesting. So if we look at, I'm a bit younger than you guys.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Like a gap of a few years, but just a little bit.
Shade, but we accept it.
Smidge.
It's all good.
So if we look at, let me just say me. If I look at my dad, he's 60 odd. His generation are the, in England, are the sons and daughters of immigrants that moved to England from Nigeria, from the West Indies, as working class Africans and what's the other one?
Caribbean.
Africans
Caribbean.
And yeah, Caribbeans. And so they were in work mode.
Yeah. Shouts out to Rihanna.
work mode. And I think our generation has now has the ability to, I don't know, like, relax a bit more.
Yeah.
And step away from, you have to work 10 times harder because you're a woman and because you're a woman of color. I'm now thinking, I understand, and it's still very relevant, but I want to have fun.
Yeah.
And I want to live, and I want to explore this creative mind that I have, that we all have, but you were in work mode.
Yeah.
You were in protective mode.
Yeah.
You were trying to help me mode. Mm. And now I'm like, I just want to make some shmoney and enjoy it.
Shout out to the word shmoney, but they didn't have the privilege like we
exactly.
do. Understand?
Like, and I think we have the privilege.
Like how many times have you said to your auntie or uncle, you speak to your very, let me not say African, your very, like, what do you call it, a traditional family member, and you speak to them about, like, being a vegetarian, they're like, what?
What?
Or even something related to this is like job satisfaction. Happy?
Happy?
What do you mean happy?
You need to pay
get
the
a
bills.
Job.
Yeah, exactly.
Cuba, I was just going to ask you, yeah, it's interesting because you said you grew up in like kind of like a strict household, and it's funny because I think a lot of people can identify with like being in an African household or from an immigrant background, and there'd be some of the most restrictive environments in terms of, you know, don't go out, don't do this, don't do that. Yeah. But it gives birth to a new generation of people that consider themselves to be so creative. Like, how do you think that happened, or do you think because of the oppression it pushed people to explore that side more?
I think the latter.
Okay.
Yeah, in my case, it was the latter because my dad was so strict for me. But then on the other hand, like, he traveled the world with us. Mm. So he was open and wanted to know about the world, but in his upbringing and in his discipline, very, very strict. Mm. But because of that, I kind of like mentally rebelled as well. Mm-hmm. And was just like, I want to have fun. And I want to explore photography, and I want to be this creative without a job title. And he's like, photography, guess.
Delivery on
That's
point.
A hobby. I'm like, no, Baba, it's not. It's like a job. So, yeah, I think, Stephen, I think I rebelled.
Yeah, no, I just find it so funny that it's just like the two were in complete opposite. You'd think, like, okay, cool, being from that household or having those experiences that you just kind of submit and be a doctor,
regular,
doctor, or like, you know,
dentist.
Something like that. But I just find it funny that it just works out the complete opposite way.
Complete opposite,
Sick. And growing up as well, I just wanted to, before we go into the next session, so you did school, how long did you go to school here, or what age were you at from?
So I was 10 when I moved to Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And so I did, so in Holland it's group 1 to 8, okay, and then high school. So okay, I did group 7 and 8, then the whole of high school, and now I'm in uni.
Okay. So then, did you study much about Dutch history, or how was that packaged to you growing up, and how did you react to that, knowing that you'd already seen quite a bit of the world at this point?
Mm. So I knew cycling through
was a thing.
Amsterdam. No, through Amsterdam. I knew that it was a thing, and I used to get trapped in the tram track so many times.
Yep. God,
but I knew cycling through the city centre that it was built on slave money.
Oh,
I knew. Okay. Because of my dad, he'd be like,
I didn't
look
know.
At these houses. Do you know where they came from?
Mm.
Black people, the VOC, the slave trade. I knew.
Mm.
And so I kind of just took everything that they were saying at school, and I'd be the one asking questions and saying like, okay, what about black people and slaves?
Mm.
And they'd be like, oh, but you have to understand that they built, you know, such great things from that. I'm like, what about black people and slaves? Mm. Like, that's a thing. And you have to understand, I'm a girl, 10, 11 years old, who's reading Roots.
Mm.
Like, I'm reading Roots.
Yeah.
6-7 times a year, I'm reading it back to front. So I know about all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was that person in class saying, okay, slavery, when are we going to talk about that?
Mm.
And what was the response to that? Is it just like, it's not something that's on the curriculum, it's not something that they actually talk about?
The thing is, it is, mm-hmm, but minutely.
Mm.
Like, it's a tiny bit.
Like it's a session, isn't it?
It's one. And that's it. So, yeah.
How did that make you feel at the time? Like, knowing that this was your country that you chose to live in.
Yeah.
And then understanding that this now is a place that is actually built off the backs of your ancestors.
Mm.
And then being in a place where you're at being educated and you're asking questions, but yet they're still coming to you like, oh, like, it doesn't really matter.
I'm going to be very honest. Mm. I did not care at the time.
Mm.
It's not, well
even
that's
now,
a bit harsh.
Like, even not even now, but like, okay, how does that make you feel now?
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll just quickly explain as to why I said I didn't care. I was very young.
Mm. Of course.
You know? Yeah. So I was like, oh my God, I got a boyfriend. Oh my God. Oh my God. So, like, I was, you know, doing other things and chilling and eating and, you know,
living life.
Chilling. So enjoying, at the time I was just like, oh my God, the big mouth in class. But then at the break, I'm like, oh my God, what are we having for lunch?
Mm.
Lauren, are you picking me up from school? Blah, blah, blah. Now, it hits deeper.
Mm.
Much deeper.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a lot. And I'm just trying to make sure that my legacy and my kids' legacy is something that my ancestors would be proud of. Because here I am in this beautiful house that was originally built on the backs of our ancestors.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm just trying to make sure that everything I do from now on makes my ancestors proud, to be honest.
That's dope, man.
What were some of the, for people that don't, like, we obviously coming into the country and understand, what was general consensus around the golden age? And then, you know, and you've told us some of the irregularities, but what was the general consensus? Like, what was being pumped out there as, like, this was the fact of that era? How was it portrayed?
As something to be proud of.
Okay.
And as something like, look at Amsterdam and look at... I hope that I understand your question.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think it was, look at how much we have benefited and look at the outcome and not what was before it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It's like glossing over it, basically.
Yeah, 100%.
Wow.
And look at what's here now. Oh, and we can't help what happened back in the day.
Yeah.
But look at Amsterdam now and look at how many Dutch engineers there are and how much knowledge we have of water and how, you know, yeah, glossing it over, basically.
That's interesting. It's just kind of glossed over. And then when you like, deep it, it's just, like, for us coming in here, Amsterdam or Holland in general is looked upon as being, like, very liberal and very free. So it'd be good to just get your point of view on, like, you know, what is the reality? Because I think when we all came over here before, like, this is very free country, accept everybody. Mm. And so, like, when you're telling me stories like this, it sounds a lot like England to me. And that's, like, not my expectation because on the outside it looks very different.
Oh, interesting one. I think that the problem in Holland and with Dutch people in general, but not everybody, but just in general, is that they label themselves as liberal. Mm. And so what you then get is, oh, but we're liberal, so we don't have that problem. Mm. And we don't do that. And the Dutch, no, never. But then you still have Black Pete. And you still have institutionalized racism.
Which has been shown by the government and
the government! The government! And you still have Black Pete. And then you dare then say, oh, but Holland, racist? No!
It's brushing it under the carpet kind of thing, isn't
it? It's funny.
And not acknowledging it, yeah.
It's like every country has like a blind
country,
blind spot. So it's almost like in America, the American dream. And if you actually look at the American dream versus the actual reality, it's almost like you believe the marketing. So obviously, like, he has been marketed.
We spoke about it.
Yeah. So he has been marketed as being like a kind of like liberal, you know, here. And so it's been said so much that people like believe it in their head and it's just not forced them to actually deal with the reality of the situation, which maybe is a little bit different to what they think.
Yeah. And I think what then ties into that is that it's a white country. And so these people in the government are not having to live with the effect of institutionalized racism or the effect of Black Pete. Yeah. So they can easily say, like, it's almost as pathetic as you can't really blame them because they're not affected by any of it. You know?
Now I get what you're saying, and it's interesting when you like recount everything. But like, I know you're like a positive person, so I want to say, in Dutch history and just in general, being in Holland, what are some of the things that bring you joy? Like the golden things about being from here? Like, what would you say are the really positive things?
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ooh.
I'm assuming they are.
Positive pampy. He makes an appearance every now and then.
No.
Monthly check-in.
Ooh. You know what it is? I'm so English.
I was going to ask that.
Like, I'm not Dutch.
Yeah, I was going to ask that.
Like, my accent's a bit wonky. And I, you know, I've lived here for a long time. But I don't identify as Dutch. And so I can enjoy the fact that Amsterdam is so small that you can cycle from one end to the other.
Trust.
I can love the fact that, you know, the Dutch healthcare system is amazing.
Me and Kwame talking about this last week. It's immaculate.
It's immaculate.
Great word.
No, really, it's immaculate.
Great word.
The creative scene in Amsterdam is amazing. Mm. I have been able to develop myself mentally, physically, on so many levels by living here, but I'm not really Dutch.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't thank the Dutch society for making me who I am. They've aided it 100%. Yeah. And I met my boyfriend here and I'm living here. We want to buy a house here. So, like, I am definitely staying here. Mm. But, yeah.
It's kind of thanks, but no thanks.
Well, the thing is, though, yeah, like, everything that you spoke about at the beginning, what you do, who you are, I feel like the society and the culture here enables all of that. Like, you can still be training to be a teacher and run a photography studio
yes.
at the same time.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean?
And I don't know if I could have done that in Manchester.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And that's just because of me having way more responsibility for my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's me being, you know, an empathic person and thinking about, okay, instead of, you know, pursuing this creative career, I could also get 3 jobs and pay different bills.
Yeah.
So definitely that individualism that I am experiencing here,
mm-hmm.
which is sometimes a negative thing, has proven to be a positive thing for me, mm-hmm. definitely.
Yeah.
So yeah, I will thank the Dutch society for that and me being here for that.
I think it's the pace as well. Sorry, Key. Amsterdam is very, Amsterdam is very chill compared to a lot of like major cities, like your New York's, or maybe even your Toronto's, but definitely your London's.
Yeah, definitely.
I've been to Manchester for a weekend, but I was there, so in my head, I've never been to Manchester. But I can imagine Manchester is still more lively, or maybe Manchester there's a quicker pace.
Definitely not.
You understand? So it's not.
I don't agree. Okay. Yeah. In Manchester, but maybe because I'm on the run here all the time, when I go to Manchester, everything slows down.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I can relax.
Mm-hmm.
I can actually hide. It's like me hiding from life in Manchester, and it's such a beautiful bliss feeling.
Wow.
I can literally go from my auntie's house to my uncle's house and just be like, oh, can I have a cup of tea? Thank you.
It's the best when you're back home.
Chilling. Best. And because I'm, as I said before, I'm an individual here. So I'm on my own. I'm on my guard. I'm having to fight life on my own.
Mm.
So when I go back, for me, it just all slows down.
Mm.
But I don't know what that would mean for somebody else. But for me, Amsterdam's fast paced.
Okay. You mentioned something about leaving a legacy for your ancestors.
Mm.
And I guess that led me to think about what you're doing right now,
mm-hmm.
With the new normal. So I'd love to just hear about what the new normal is, why you decided to do it, and just learn a little bit more about that.
All right, so the summer of 2020, Black Lives Matter movement, the most recent one, because there have been many. And then we're going to tie back into the Cool Kids Club.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to create a space where we could talk and come together as young creatives that was not the Cool Kids Club.
Mm.
That was not the, you go to this event, hold your red cup, take some pictures, then F off home.
Mm.
I wanted it to be somewhere where we could talk about social matters that were difficult to speak about, but that it was a safe space to do so.
Mm-hmm.
Without it having the pressure of, oh my God, this is so cool. Oh my God, so many cool people. Oh my God. No, calm down. It's serious business. Let's talk. Let's feel. Let's go through it together. And
creating a community.
Yeah, community. But without it being cool. And that happened. And I think that because I'm a very, very light-skinned black woman, and I'm still having trouble trying to find out where I fit on the spectrum of black.
Mm. Explain that.
Well, I think that I'm having a bit of a, and it's not a bad thing, but I'm having a bit of a crisis as to how black I am.
Okay.
Is that a thing?
Yeah.
Not to disqualify what you mean, but like, where has that narrative come from?
Us. Well, maybe not.
What do you mean by us?
Black people.
Okay, yeah.
Because, like, there is a skill factor or a level of blackness.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, maybe at one point we've all had it. Oh, that guy's so black. How calm is that?
You understand? Like,
Yeah. But I also think if you look at history and you look at like my upbringing with my dad, he'd talk about this all the time, about slavery. Mm. You'd have the field workers and you'd have the black people and half-caste people. Yeah. I know you're not meant to say that anymore, but that's what they called it back in the day, that worked in the house. And that the women were raped by the slave owners and they created the light skin picking, you know, like the kids. Yeah. And so I think that divide has trickled down in the black community. Mm-hmm. And me being of such richness, ethnically wise, it's a blessing. Definitely is a blessing. But for me now, personally, it's hard. Because inside, I am so black. Mm. It's ridiculous. Like, I've lived in Nigeria. I've got my Jamaican roots. Like, I'm really, really black. But on the outside, I'm so light. Yeah. Like, it's ridiculous.
But it shouldn't be, I think I hear your, I hear where you're coming from. Like, and I understand, like, not understand exactly what you're going through, but I understand that there are levels of colorism and shadism that work within our community. Mm. But what I would say is that, like, it shouldn't matter, really, to you. And I know it's, and I know the time that we're working in right now is very difficult because at the minute it's like Black Lives Matter happens in the summer. Mm. And then everybody, no matter who you are, you want to stand and talk about what you believe. Mm. Whereas there are people that are in our community where, and we like to do it a lot. We like to, I'm not saying that everyone does it, but we like to look at people that are talking about certain things and we wonder, is that person qualified?
Exactly. To talk on it? Exactly. You know what I mean? And touch upon their experiences.
Yeah.
And in the summer, I really noticed and felt, and again, it's not a bad thing. It's a process, mm-hmm. right? I really noticed that I was like, oh my God, can I speak about this? Mm. Yes, I can. You know, remind yourself of who you are. Mm-hmm. Yes, you can. But then, oh my God, but my experiences as a light-skinned black person are not the same as a dark-skinned black person. Does not take away from my experiences.
Exactly.
Absolutely not. But I think that the awareness of those differences has definitely come to me in the last year.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's, as I said again, a process, Rachel, you know.
Of course.
I wanted to speak Dutch then. But
<Please do>.
It's Rachel. But yeah, it's like, and then with the new normal, like it's, I want to create a community where I can give other people the stage to talk about, you know, different topics. Mm. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to, you know, talk about this and other topics.
Yeah, I think,
yeah, definitely.
I think I'd agree with you. I think everyone in this room will attest to that conversation is important.
Mm.
And the fact that you've had like, you're having that realization within yourself to say, look, my experience, even though I have had an experience of being black and a woman and a light-skinned black woman, it's different to someone else. The fact that you're having a conversation about it means that you're moving forward, you know what I mean? And I think you should never, ever feel that you are inadequate or less than a black woman or a light-skinned black woman or a person because of what is on the outside. Because the fact of the matter is you've gone through probably more experiences than so many other people, and your experience and your point of view are valid. So like, then I don't think you should ever really think of
and
it that
way. And the key word is experience.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, doesn't matter what color you see yourself. If you've experienced something from somebody else, you've been given that experience because of how they see you.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I'm trying to say?
But that's what traps your mind. That's what traps your head in this. Is because in the black community, I've experienced it on so many occasions where people are like, oh, but Cuba, you're the educated, light-skinned black person. And so you have nothing to say in this. Because look at you. Look at the definition of your curls. Look at how you present yourself. Look at how you speak. Look at the color of your skin. But with white people, they do not see me as white. And so in that world, I then have to navigate myself and experience racism, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm like stuck because for white people, I'm not white. Mm. For black people, not all, but for in some situations, I'm seen as different than black people. And so I'm just trying to navigate through those two worlds?
It's very interesting. Sorry to cut you, Stephen.
Okay, go on.
Because we spoke to Burano, yeah? Mm-hmm. And Burano's talking about the way, if you're from Southeast, you have to work in different, you have to like move in different ways in different places. It's like code switching. It's the same thing that you're doing. And it's so funny that it's like from a completely different point of view to see that like everybody has to figure out a way to navigate through their lives, because we're all kind of up against it in some way. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? And I guess like the way that you're doing it is through your interactions with people from different races. Mm-hmm. Burano does the same thing, but it's based on that's based on the color of your skin, but it's based off where he's from and the color of his skin as well. Yeah, so it's like, it's so as a point to just to like put it there. I think it's just a nice thing to understand. Go on, see what you're saying.
You know, it's because if you're like white, then you're white. There's no one has had like a different shade of white, and you're just like, he gets treated differently, which is an interesting one. And then, Cube, to your point, I was just gonna say that. Also, just bear in mind that no one really knows what we are, because we have not been taught our history. So, like in the community ourselves, we're projecting different things we're being told. We're trying to figure it out, which is why people are like, some people are saying this, some people are saying that. Like, an example is that melanin's been in the dictionary for a while, but probably just started getting used 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Or, you know, because someone picked it up and was just like, or read a book and was just like, oh, da-da-da-da-da-da. So, like, I think within the community, everyone's still trying to figure it out. And as, a Nigerian guy, like, there's a lot of our history that I didn't know about until, like, I think I watched Birth of a Nation on Netflix.
Okay.
And that was just, like, the first time, like, my eyes were open. Like, you know, like, that street in Nigeria, like, Bodilon, it's named after, like, a colonial oppressor. And it's just kind of, like, knowing within these streets in Nigeria I used to walk on, like, actually those names are from people that colonized the country. There's even a statue of some of them. And it's like, if you're going to the country that's been colonized and they still have statues of people that were oppressing them there, that just shows the level of confusion within there. So it's just like, and this is the result of a lack of education on our own cultures, that people are trying to figure it out and make their own kind of rules. And it becomes like at school where you have the cool kids table and it's just like, oh, you can't sit with us, this is our rules. And then it's like literally like a school situation, but in a kind of a racial context, and everyone.
But
no,
what's
really
interesting
knows
on that though, is like this whole conversation is a little bit about both worlds, isn't it? It's about history, like what you guys are talking about, but also the present day as well.
Yeah.
Like with everything we've discussed about you, your identity, what you do, how do you see yourself as a figurehead and someone that sets an example for the younger generation? And are you conscious of the fact that as someone who goes through some of the internal struggles that you do, and we all go through internal struggles, are you aware of the example that you can set for younger generations of people that may look up to you as well?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah. And then that is because, and that's coming back to Instagram, because that's my platform of choice. I try and portray my life as real as it can be. And some people can find it extra, but I am extra, so I'm not going to apologize for that. And if you don't want, unfollow me, like, it's fine. But I am a naturally very high energetic, high emotional person.
All the time.
Like,
you're so sick of that, bro.
But I also, so you can be either rational or emotional. Not all the time, but I have noticed that I'm not really rational. I'm more of an emotional person. And so my emotions are always there, whether it's a negative emotion or a positive emotion. So the extraness that you then describe as all the time is just my energy, which is always high and fueled by emotions. But with Instagram or with whoever I'm talking to or whoever I'm, you know, in touch with, I try and show both sides of that. So if I'm upset, which is really intense sometimes, I will show that as well. Because it's so normal. Like, I am struggling with mental health issues, but I'm also a very, very, very happy person.
And you can be both, innit?
And you can be both.
Yeah.
Like, my mum died a few years ago, so that's brought a lot of trauma. She had cancer, and I saw it up close and personal in the hospital. That's brought nightmares, you know, me being scared of death, having nightmares of me actually dying, or Lauren, my boyfriend, dying, and me having to wake him up and be like, oh my God, are you alive? Are you breathing? But then I wake up and be like, good morning, because it's genuine. Like, you can have both sides.
Yeah.
Me being, you know, brought up by a strict African dad, trauma.
Traumatic.
That's good. It's ridiculous how much trauma that brought.
Yeah.
In therapy for it, talking about it with a, you know, a counsellor. But on the other side, I'm a very, very happy person. Genuinely, you know, happy. I've got a lot of things that I want to do in life.
And you're doing a lot of them.
And I'm doing a lot. I am actually doing it. So, like, I try and think of, okay, if somebody's watching me now, or if I'm watching myself in 10, 20 years, am I going to be proud of this? If my mom is looking down at me and watching me doing what I'm doing, am I making her smile? If the answer is yes, I'll cry on Instagram. I'll smile on Instagram. It's all of that.
Yeah, facts.
I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, no, what I really like is that just listening to you, you embrace your normalness.
100%. Yeah.
You don't try to be something you're not.
There's no facade, isn't it?
No.
But you make your normalness the cool thing about you.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Do you get what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I get it.
It's like, you don't, there's no bravado.
No.
There's no facade. Like,
there's a slight facade. Very important.
It's just
very, very important.
It's just you being normal makes you unique.
And I think that's a thing that makes that a lot of young people need to know. It's like, it's okay to just be yourself. Because when you are yourself, you're probably the cooler kid out of everybody, because everyone's trying to do the thing that everyone's trying to do.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean? So,
exactly.
Yeah,
I think that, because I think about this a lot, right? I think that death, and the death of somebody close, that's my life changing, soul shattering moment that I've had in life. It can be something else, but mine was that when my mom died, I was like, oh my God, God, you better look after my mommy. But from that, I was like, if I can go through this, and if I can hold her hand, tell her to let go because she's in so much pain, kiss her, hug her, then actually say goodbye to her, bury my own mother. If I can get through that, and again, this is my very personal experience, then what is life?
What is life?
It's something so beautiful that I might as well be normal and embrace myself.
Yep.
Because I went through that. Like, it's beautiful.
Yeah, Steven.
No, I was just going to say, I was literally saying the same thing when I think it was when I went to Nigeria, because it was the first time I kind of went to see my dad's grave, and I was telling these guys, it's the same thing when I was riding in the car on the way for the funeral. It's just like, literally, the worst thing has happened. Like, what is there to fear after that? And it just gives you like a huge release to just not really care about anything. It just gives you that extra lease of freedom. But I also wanted to touch with you, because I know you're a happy person, you're a happy soul in general, and I just wanted to ask some odd questions.
Yeah, go on.
What are some of the most creative things that you've seen or been a part of since you've been here in Amsterdam?
The most crazy, and what was the second
The
bit?
Most creative things that you've either seen or been a part of or witnessed. Like,
creative things. Brown Skin Girl.
Yo.
Okay.
Brown Skin Girl was lit.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for the people listening...
There, I was asleep.
Oh, my God.
Literally.
You missed out.
Nap.
So, Brown Skin Girl... All right, I need to rewind a bit. I approached Jasmine, who is the sickest creative I know. She owns Moonfields Online, which is a spiritual web shop.
Okay.
She's a stylist, a photographer, creative director, everything.
Wow.
And so when I started out, I was like, okay, I need a mentor. I need somebody who I can follow, who I really love, from a distance. A bit of a stalker-ish kind of thing. But who I really love and admire from a distance, I need to to connect with them. Sent her a message on Instagram saying, listen, I really love you. Like, not to be creepy, but I love your stuff. Can I please assist you?
Mm.
And she was like, oh my God, nobody's ever asked me that before. And I'm like, listen, I might as well, because like, I already have a no. If I reach out to you, you might say yes. Mm. Reached out, assisted her.
I already have a no. Mm.
Like, it's such a Dutch thing to say. It's like, you already have a no, so you can get a yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah, I know you'd love that shit. Yeah. Yes, like, love, yes, you like, see his brain
back tattooed, bruv. What? Lower back tap loading, fam?
A tramp stamp.
I don't know why I said that.
So I reached out to her and she's like, oh my God, okay. So I helped her a few times and then she was like, okay, for Sony, we are looking for an all black female crew of creatives. Would you like to be my photography assistant? And I'm like, oh my God.
Yes.
Didn't even know the people that were coming. I'm like, yes. Sony, what? Me? Photography assistant? Yes, please. So we do this massive shoot. These influencers that came made me want to shit my pants.
I swear.
Like, I was shaking. I was like, all right, Cuba, act cool. You got this.
Keep it together, girl.
Keep it together, girl. So I'm keeping it together. Amazing, amazing individuals that came through. We really, really put on a show. Then a few months later, we had a show, like an art gallery thing.
Yeah.
And that was just amazing. Sick, so you gotta think of this. Everybody that was at that shoot were women of color and in the creative scene.
Mm.
Then we have a art gallery opening for all these pictures that we took. And one of my pictures is hanging there. Listen, I stood there all night saying, listen, I took this picture.
That's how we met Cuba.
Really?
That's how we met Cuba.
Yeah. I was telling everybody. By the way, guys, are you having a nice night?
See that picture over there?
I was literally stood in front of it.
So
everybody
proud.
Looking, thinking,
I love that, man.
I took this picture. I think that's the first big thing.
Amazing. That's dope, man.
Because it was just like a room full of black people.
I remember that day. And I remember like being there and be like, where have y'all been?
Exactly.
Yes.
I got you.
Upset, no, we're good.
I was actually asleep. No, but I didn't have any other reason apart from I was just sleeping.
No, you missed
Nathan
out.
Was there as well.
Yeah,
right?
Nathan was there.
Even my brother was there.
Your friend.
No. Jenny
was there.
Yeah.
I met you guys there.
Yeah.
Got pictures of you on my laptop from that event. I'll send you them later.
Oh, wavy.
But yeah.
Ada was there.
Kieran came back and gave me the report because we linked up at Stephen's house after.
Yeah, yeah.
Gave me the report. I was like, I'm so exhausted.
No, I think that was because from that moment, because there were girls that I'm still in touch with that I met there, and you guys, obviously, but so many other people that are not part of the Cool Kids Club. Mm. The Cool Kids were there, don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
they were there, and
I was
like, oh my God.
Full effect, man.
In force. A legion of them.
It was such a nice, chilled vibe.
Nah, for sure.
Yeah, it really was.
And so I was
really
like, okay, this is possible. We can do this.
Mm-hmm. It was really nice.
We can do this, yeah. Mm. Do you have another odd question for me?
Yeah, that wasn't odd, by the way. I really thought you were about to go helter skelter.
I know, but that was good.
Yeah, yeah. All right, cool. We'll crank it up a little bit.
Okay, let's go.
Cool. So I asked this to Brianna last time. So we're talking about looking at the golden age, which was kind of like horses, chariots, that kind of thing.
Mm.
If you had to equate some of those items into like today's scenario, what would be your equivalent of like a crown, for instance? Like, what represents a crown for you in today?
A crown.
Doesn't have to be literal, but like
a crown.
No,
I get it.
Perfect.
A crown. I think it would either... I've got two things that I'm thinking about. The most obvious would be my hair.
Mm. Oh, wow. Okay, that's a good way.
But I'm very... My hair's my biggest insecurity because I got very thin hair.
Mm.
But when I switch it up and put braids in and twist in, I'm like, yo.
Yo.
This is my crown.
At least you can do that. When your hairline starts to thin as a man.
Exactly.
It's just game over.
You go to
Turkey.
And then you get those dots on your head.
Yeah. No shame.
So I'd go. That's
I remember
the first
being
one.
In Istanbul. Sorry, just yeah, a real side
And
note.
Then you've told me this story before.
Just seeing bit like literally fair hundreds of men walking around with the hair transplant.
Is it?
It's like a, it's like a small, it's like a wrapped towel around your head.
Because they take hair from the back and then they put it at the
it's,
front.
Yeah, it's very surreal. Like you're walking around Istanbul and there's hundreds of men with this thing. Even on your flight back, just bare man shamelessly with the transplant. And do you know what? I'm not trying to even shame them.
No,
like,
no.
It's a very interesting thing to see.
If I had monies, and my hair was going, I'd go do it. What for?
Would you?
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
It's just in the same way when I was offered braces at 15, 16,
different.
I didn't do it.
But why?
I just embrace who I am and how my body.
No, I get it, but like, I'd happily do it. Happily embrace the bald look too. do you know what I mean? I'd just do it. Like this, why not?
I've got a beard to fall back on, innit? So I'm calm.
I hear that.
If I had, if I was bald and no beard, then I would be stressed.
Stressed.
One potato.
Trust me.
But long.
Sorry.
No, you had to finish.
We sidetracked.
Oh, my second one would be my camera. Whether that's on my phone.
Nice.
Because we've got really good cameras now. Or my actual camera, which cost me an arm and a leg. But I'm so happy that I bought it. Because it's powerful. And I don't write anymore. I used to write, so before I would have been like, oh, my fingers to type or a pen. But now, because I like to like capture a moment or capture an emotion or a vibe, it would be my camera.
Wow.
Because that's what I can give the world.
That's dope.
That's so sick.
That's dope.
Yeah.
And where would your palace be? What would be your palace? What's your place?
Somewhere that feels like home. Somewhere where there's a kitchen that I can cook with a table. With comfortable chairs that we can all eat, that can invite people over.
Mm-hmm.
But nowhere specific.
Nowhere specific.
Yeah.
Like that. Can be anywhere.
Yeah.
And then, also that, if we were to ask, who represents the golden generation today? Like, who are they? Is it people? Is it feeling? Is it thing? What is that gold that exists today for you?
I think.
You're on fire today, by the
way. Yeah, you are on fire. Silly. These are good questions.
It's silly.
Yeah, and Kia's effect.
You too.
Golden. All right. So there are a few people and things and feelings that just genuinely, like, you know when you have that moment where your heart actually warms up and it, like, swells up on you? Like, you actually nearly want to cry.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, oh, my God! Yeah!
I've read
you
about
do.
It.
You, we're going to get you there.
Yeah.
Acting like he's a stone, bruv.
Not even killer, just stone.
Stone Cold Steve Austin, isn't it?
No, but I think a few people that make me feel like that are, to be very honest, this podcast. Like, I'm really not even going to lie. This podcast, and I told you this before, it makes me so happy to listen to this podcast.
Thank you.
When you guys talk about what makes you happy, you have to understand, my dad never talked about what made him smile. And then I'm in a room, literally on my scooter, on my bike, in a room, full of banter, full of love for one another, respect for one another, educated, happy souls talking about what made you smile. Like, sorry.
That was from Stephen again.
Shout out to Stephen.
Bro, just...
This is your episode, fam. Stephen's the guest.
Stephen's the guest.
Let me get a picture of you after, please, bro.
So damn emotional.
No, but Cuba, that's a great answer. It happens.
Can't take it.
Judep, what's happening?
It's all flip.
It's all bad. Pull up sometimes.
It's all bad. Cuba,
what have you done?
You know what? Because you know sometimes when you see when Stephen sometimes get like a surface level compliment, he like
acts up in it, but when he gets a compliment that deep, it's just
he don't
like,
know what to do.
Right, okay. Yeah.
Don't know what to do.
The reprogrammer said.
He just melts down.
Growth, bro. It's growth.
No, we'll be back after this commercial break.
We'll be back after this commercial break.
Sorry.
Yeah, go on.
No, thank you for that, but I think you still had a...
Okay. And then you got people... I love Coco. You guys know Coco.
Yeah. We know Coco.
Yeah.
We know Coco.
I've been on a walk with her through Rondo in, I think, either the first or second lockdown, and that talk was just like, wow, yes. An older person that knows what I'm going through, that feels me, that I feel.
Quite closely, I can imagine.
And then I got Jaleesa, my business partner. Mm-hmm. Like, we complement each other on so many levels. Like, she's smart, loyal, funny, you know, has that drive that drives me, grounds me. But yeah, and then I've got my boyfriend. Like, shout out to my boyfriend. Like, shout he's a lawyer, hardworking black man in a white firm, doing things. He's on the posters. He's on the website, setting that example.
Yeah, yeah.
He's currently studying again, going for his second master's.
Wow,
just
wow.
greedy.
You
with
ever sleep in your house?
Just
like.
Greedy.
No, we always we literally always work.
Shout out to the
like we chill, but we work hard and we play hard.
It. Iron sharpens
iron. Shout out to Wiz Khalifa, man.
So those are like the golden people, like people that just motivate me and like motivate others and like are setting the examples and are working hard and playing hard as well. Yeah. Who can also have fun.
And then. Yeah. The last one before I call off. So if the golden age had a legacy, for the golden generation that's coming in the future, what would you like their legacy to be? What would you like them to leave?
Your legacy to be.
Yeah, or to be known as.
As part of GG.
Yeah. What would you like them to be known for?
A generation that knows when to stop.
Ooh, okay.
And take a break. Mm. And breathe. Mm-hmm. Still work hard. Definitely still work hard and have a goal, you know. But definitely listen to that inner voice that's screaming and being like, oh, my God, I'm tired. Or, ooh, this is hard. Or, I don't like this situation. I want to go home. Mm-hmm. Take naps. Mm-hmm. Rest. Mm-hmm. Read books. Mm-hmm. But just like, because as we said before, the generation of my dad, work, harsh. Mm. Protection, no fun, work. We're now, like, living life. Mm. But I feel that because we're going that fast, it's hard sometimes to, like, pull the brakes and be like, whoa. Mm. We are doing it, definitely are doing it. But the generation after us will then find that perfect sweet spot between working hard, making that money, but also taking breaks and going on holiday and working abroad and going on 3-month breaks. I'm looking at Yaf right now.
Yafri don't.
Beach pictures, chilling, like, you know.
Hey, you're speaking about how important it is.
Yeah, no, it's really important. It's really important. But yeah, that would be the legacy.
That's beautiful. Yeah. No further questions, Your Honor.
All right, then.
Boy, go on. Thank you. I just have to say thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Because, like, you've been a long-time fan of the show. Thank you for your energy in real life. Thank you for supporting us on all of our endeavours. Thank you for your help with Diversity Collective early on, giving me pointers on how to shape that and stuff. And just also, I remember the first time like myself and Yaf met you at Oscam in July 1st for, like, Keti Koti. And I remember just being, like, bowled over by your elegance, your excitement, your energy. And it was like, honestly, like the first time meeting someone that was truly invested in the pod. And it's kind of was like, maybe you had it before in London, I think, or someone here was here. But it was the first thing where, like, oh, there's a little bit of maybe power, or there's a little bit of an effect, you understand? Like, us men are chatting, but there's output, you understand?
Oh, yeah,
there's a feeling.
Definitely.
And just thank you for always keeping it real with us. And you're 24 years old, and what you've done is inspiring. I was going to say scary, but let me just say...
No, it's scary as well. It's scary as hell. It really is scary. Like, it's a lot. It's good, but scary.
But just thank you.
Scary good.
Scary good.
Yeah, I like that.
I'm just here filming. But I guess we can wrap it here, boys. And girls, and ladies, and gentlemen.
People.
Persons. You've been listening to the Out of Home podcast with your boys, Kieran, Yaf, Stephen, Kwame, Ginny, and Keita. And we will be joined today by the lovely Cuba. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, guys.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
You London boys are crazy.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.